Thank you. Our last oral argument of the morning is file A23-0102, State of Minnesota versus Antonio Hugh. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and finally the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever counsel for the appellant is ready, just approach the podium. You can adjust it to your level. It goes up and down, and the microphone, and just please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Excuse me. My name is Greg Scanlon, and I represent appellant Antonio Hugh. We are asking this court to reverse his conviction for firearm possession based on insufficient evidence. Circumstantial evidence review is not about the jury. It's about reasonable doubt. It's about meeting that burden with evidence, and it's about the charging decision itself. Excuse me. We review to ensure that the state's burden has been met by the state's evidence on the crime charged by the state. Here, the decisive evidence was missing because the police searched the wrong vehicle. They otherwise produced no eyewitnesses or forensic evidence, not even gunshot residue. All they had was grainy video and 23 shell casings. The video does clearly show
some of which were found near your client.
Correct. The video does clearly show Mr. Hugh committing a second-degree assault, whether or not his gun was a firearm. The state chose instead to charge firearm possession, a more consequential offense, without decisive proof. I was a public defender in district court for 12 years, and I never had a client charged with firearm possession without clear evidence that his gun was a firearm. I say that just to say that this is an unusual record.
Did you ever have a case where a client was charged without a firearm being introduced in evidence?
No, not a firearm possession case, no. I did have cases where what I now call TikTok Glock, where a client is on social media waving a gun that certainly looks like a firearm. And in those cases, the police get a tracking warrant or a search warrant, they stop him, search his house, whatever, and they find the gun, and then the gun is in evidence. Without the gun, it's hard to prove that a gun is a firearm. The one piece that I really wanted to talk about, and I know there's a lot we can talk about, and I do want to focus on what this court finds dispositive in this record, but I did want to just address the idea that Mr. Hugh would not have brought a replica firearm to a shootout, or a replica BB gun, to a shootout involving firearms. It is reasonable to infer that people
He was really stupid.
I'm sorry?
Unless he was really stupid.
Well, and we would have to infer that he's really stupid.
Did the casings, Mr. Scanlon, were the casings that were found near your client, were they traced to a particular caliber of a gun?
They were 40 caliber. All five of them were 40 caliber.
And that's not a BB gun.
That's not a BB gun.
Okay, thank you.
They did not do any testing of those casings,
right.
Certainly for DNA, for fingerprints. They also didn't test them to see if they were all fired from the same gun.
No, I didn't suggest they were. Thank you, Mr. Scanlon.
And I don't believe, and again, nobody measured, but the testimony was that casings fall within a 4-foot diameter. That's 2 feet in any direction from where he was. And if you watch that video, none of those casings are within 2 feet of where his gun was when he fired. And the reason I mentioned 23 casings is...
Well, can I just push back on that a little bit? I've watched the videos. I mean, it's really hard to see. I think we probably could all agree about that. But he definitely was moving about the range in the area where the casings were found. Would you agree with that? Sort of in that area of the car, kind of behind the tree?
Yeah, so I think the only time he passed, he would have stepped where the casings were, and I might be wrong. When he initially approaches that area, he's coming in the street. He comes along the pickup truck, comes around the front of the pickup truck between that and the SUV, and then takes his shooting position at the rear of the SUV. So at that point, he hasn't entered that area. After he shoots, he goes up to the space between the front two vehicles, and then it's when he's going back that he's shot. And at that point, he runs along the boulevard, runs through that area back to the south where he came from. But otherwise, I don't know anywhere in the video where anybody kind of went through that area or might have kicked casings or, I don't recall anyone doing that. I certainly don't think the officers did that. I don't think, again, after the time that he shot his gun, I don't think there's any evidence of anybody besides him as he's fleeing entering that area of the boulevard. I might be wrong, but I don't. And again, the video that I'm talking about...
Would it be a reasonable inference from the position of the casings that the two, you know, what were characterized as muzzle flashes were not the only shots that were fired? Do you understand my question? So we know there were five casings. We saw two muzzle flashes in the videos.
It's reasonable to infer that he shot, that not every time he shot there was a muzzle flash.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
I think it's also reasonable to infer that there are only two muzzle flashes or puffs of air or whatever because he only shot two times. I think those are equally reasonable. I think you certainly can't say that the only reasonable inference is that he shot five times. Because if that muzzle flash is an evidence of him shooting a BB gun or a firearm, then it's reasonable to infer that those are the only two times that he shot.
So I just want to make sure I understand the alternative hypothesis that you're advancing here. It seemed to me that at the trial, the alternative hypothesis was that this was an area where a lot of guns are fired, and so none of those casings came from the weapon, the gun, we'll call it the gun, as you do in your brief, that Mr. Hugh had that day. Is that your alternative hypothesis here?
With respect to the casings, yes. And again, you know, we have to view all the circumstances as a whole, and I understand that it does kind of, by the sergeant's testimony, it sort of turns on the muzzle flashes and the casings. But this is my point about the 23 casings. I don't think anybody is suggesting those other 18 casings that are up the street. I realize that none of those are Mr. Hughes, and none of the ones in the boulevard are from the other two guns. But I don't think anybody is suggesting that the other two shooters shot 18 times. And as I talked about in my brief, some of those casings would have had to travel a long distance either by wind or kicking or whatever to even end up where they were. I mean, there's 18 casings where they were shooting, and I just don't think there's any way you can conclude that they shot 18 times. They may have shot only four times. There were four signs of bullets, one that hit Mr. Hugh and two that hit the pickup truck, and there's a mark on a vehicle up by 1264, or by the more northerly building where the other shooter was. And so that's my point about the casings. It's a busy neighborhood. It's a busy street, unfortunately. And so there are casings everywhere, casings from recent shootings. And so I think that lends to a reasonable inference that somebody else fired a .40 caliber on some other occasion, the day before, earlier that morning, whenever, and left those casings there. Because they are kind of grouped for somebody who was standing between the tree and the pickup truck. They're all within that 4-foot radius, and none of them are within the 4-foot radius where he is. Yeah, so that's my point about the totality of the casings. I think it also, I mean, again, in the, you know, I don't know what a 40 caliber looks like compared to a replica BB gun, a replica 40 caliber BB gun. I don't know what a 40 caliber looks like necessarily compared to, on this record, compared to a 22 caliber or a smaller caliber. You can't see, you can barely even see the gun. You can't make out the gun in the video. I mean, you can kind of see the other two shooters' guns maybe a little more clearly when they first are arriving in that 82A video, when they first get as far south as they get. But you certainly can't see Mr. Hughes' gun with any clarity at all.
Did Mr. Scanlon, did your client admit that a puff emitted from his gun twice?
He didn't admit that, no.
Okay.
So he how did, do we know? I mean, he didn't testify.
No, I know he didn't testify. So there's no suggestion that that happened. Is that in your brief?
That's just me reviewing the evidence as an attorney. I watched it several times. I had other people in my office kind of come and look. How many do you see?
Sure.
My eyes are
but
not
I mean,
great.
if that's, and believe me, mine aren't either. But, you know, if that's, I want to make sure I, you know, use the right words, a concession, not admission, but, you know, an apparent possibility, then that would suggest that at least two of the casings came from your client's gun. Would that be a fair statement? So, I mean, all these other casings may be around from, you know, the general, you know, criminal element that's going on now, but that would suggest two of them were from his gun, and isn't that a problem for you?
Well, no, you can infer that whatever emits from the gun is caused by combustion. You can also infer that whatever emits from the gun is caused by compressed air. There isn't any evidence in the record that those emissions are only caused by a gun that uses combustion. And so,
what was the testimony from the police officers on that point?
Well, so first of all, the state said nothing about muzzle flashes in their opening statement. They did not ask the officer. This was Sergeant McQuay. He was the only one who testified about it, and he was the investigating police officer. The prosecutor didn't ask him on direct about muzzle flashes. It came out on cross, and he was asked, is it possible that these emissions could be caused by a compressed air gun? I'm not quoting it directly. And his answer was, don't know. Didn't even say, I don't know.
Just to follow up on that, given that that was testimony that was elicited on cross-examination, is that even testimony that we would include when isolating the circumstances proved in this case to apply our standard of review?
Well, I mean, I included it as a circumstance proved. I guess you wouldn't have to include it. I mean, I think it's also possible that the fact that his testimony was, I don't know, means that it's unknowable and it doesn't count either way. You can't infer anything from it.
But our standard of review requires us in isolating the circumstances proved to consider the facts that necessarily would have to have been proven, you know, by the state. And so, you know, in order for the jury to reach its verdict. And so I just question whether that testimony even comes into our analysis, because if it was an essential fact for the jury to rely on in reaching a verdict of guilt, then maybe they wouldn't have reached a verdict of guilt. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and you know, part of the struggle with finding circumstances proved that are consistent with the verdict is, particularly in a case like this, is there were a variety of theories upon which they could have decided it was a firearm. We don't know that they credited that they thought it was the flashes. We don't know that they thought it was the casings. We don't know if they relied on the argument. He wouldn't bring it, you know, he would only be doing this if it was a real gun. And so, you know, I guess I don't think that my position is that that's undisputed evidence to the extent that it's evidence at all. I mean, and I don't know, maybe that removes it consideration altogether, but I don't think it's necessarily inconsistent with the verdict.
Does it matter that the district court relied on the muzzle flashes evidence when deciding the motion for judgment of acquittal?
Well, it doesn't. Well, I think it matters in the sense that what the district court said was, because he said, I don't know, I think it's reasonable to infer that they don't. He didn't address whether it's also reasonable to infer that they do, that a compressed air gun does cause that effect.
I guess my question is, when considering the circumstances proved, when we're looking at the circumstances proved in the context of a motion for judgment of acquittal was denied, and one of the bases for that was the testimony about muzzle flashes, does that change our analysis as to what facts we would include in that analysis?
I guess I don't have a quick answer to that question. I don't think that the judge's ruling on a motion for judgment of acquittal necessarily establishes what the jury what this jury relied on in reaching their verdict, which inferences they drew.
Can I ask one more question?
Go right ahead, Judge.
So you're out of time, but I got permission to ask one more question. So the district court wasn't even required to apply the circumstantial evidence standard of review at that stage of the trial, right? Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, they cited the case Sams. I'll be honest, I didn't look into the motion for judgment of acquittal much. I didn't consider that much because the question here is the same. And so I just noted that he sort of, even if he was applying it, he didn't apply it right because he didn't say why the alternative hypothesis was unreasonable. He just said the non-alternative hypothesis was. I take no position on whether he applied the right standard at that stage of the proceedings or not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, may it please the court. I'm Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Peter Marker for the state. This court does not see a lot of gun possession cases without the gun. That's certainly true. We don't see a lot of those in district court either. But this is a case where the evidence does support the jury's verdict. And I would push back on appellant that this court's review does not take into account the jury. That's just not the case. The Minnesota Supreme Court has made clear in several cases, and most specifically in State versus Hawes, that we defer, consistent with our standard of review, to the jury's acceptance of the proof of these circumstances and rejection of evidence in the record that conflicts with the circumstances proved. It is a deference to the jury on the question of circumstances proved.
So would that cover this muzzle flash testimony that we were just talking about with appellant's counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the exhibit, I think it's Exhibit 82, which shows the firing, what the state believes is the firing of the gun, that evidence, that is in evidence. And so it is clear that there are muzzle flash, or there is a smoky substance emitted from the firearm at that point in time. Counsel says, or appellant suggests there are two. I suggest there are four. They are fast, but I've also looked at this thing a lot of times, and there are multiple muzzle flashes. And I would suggest that there are five, because there are five casings right in the area where that gun was fired. Now, they are over his shoulder and behind him, which is consistent with the testimony that is a common area where you find casings. They discard, it depends on the manufacturer, but they discard sometimes over the shoulder and to the right. That is from, just a moment here, that's from volume two, pages 21 and 22 of the transcript. I would also direct this court's attention to exhibits 16 and 20 of these are photographs of where the casings were collected by the police, right in that area off of the right front corner bumper of that truck, right to the right and behind of where appellant was shooting that firearm, at the left rear, the right rear corner of that SUV where he was taking, where he was kneeling down. So, Your Honor, I think that a circumstance proved that is consistent with the verdict is that those were muzzle flashes. And a circumstance proved that is consistent with the verdict is that there were casings in the area where that gun was fired. And now when you consider the totality that appellant is concealing his identity, walking northbound towards two people who are obviously about to engage with firearms. They have their firearms pulled out, which the video evidence shows. They are approaching each other. The two guys retreat for a second and then start firing. He's not bringing a BB gun to this situation, and he is actively approaching the situation. And then he circles around the back end of the SUV, fires multiple shots. We can dispute how many muzzle flashes there are, but there are more than two.
Does the record indicate how old Mr. Hugh is?
I'm not sure that it probably does, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
I want to
Do you know
20.
What it is? How old is he?
I don't know.
Thank you.
Multiple shots fired, then he gets hit in the shoulder and retreats smartly. And the other two are off as well. Police don't know who they were. And the video continues. And he reconnects with someone who was also walking northbound on that street. And they meet at a Ford Explorer. He's clearly in pain. And it appears that they put something in that car. The police told the wrong car, so we don't have the gun. But a reasonable inference, and this was argued to the jury, was that he disposed of the firearm there, and then the police show up within a minute or so. The collection of these circumstances lead to the conclusion that that was a firearm that he was shooting. And while it is maybe within the realm of possibility that it wasn't a firearm, that is not a reasonable conclusion based upon the circumstances that were proven. And the circumstances, again, include, and the most critical ones are the muzzle flashes and the location of the casings, which are right in the area where he was firing.
So here's my question about the muzzle flashes. So if appellant looks at the video and says, if appellant's counsel looks at the video, he says he thinks he sees two. You look at the video, you say you maybe see four, but we should say that it's five because of the casings. But the fact that we see four potential flashes and the fact that there's five bullets, wouldn't that also potentially create a reasonable inference, since one of the inferences that you're wanting us to draw is that all five of those bullets came from the same gun? If from the video we only see four, wouldn't that actually provide evidence of the opposite, which I think comes back to whether the muzzle flashes are actually supportive of the jury's verdict or not?
I think it's a good question, Your Honor, and I appreciate it. I think the jury can infer that, you know, these are shots that are fired in very quick succession, just based on the speed of the video. And there's not a muzzle flash for each casing, or at least not the one that you can see. I think that's a fair inference. But that
is there testimony about that?
No, but the video speaks for itself, though.
A gun that's operated doesn't have a muzzle flash for each firing. There's the video. Speaks for itself on that fact.
I think it does.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it does. And
just not clearly.
I mean, the video we disagree as to how many muzzle flashes there are. there are multiple muzzle flashes, and the casings are collected right there. They're right behind them. They just jumped.
But if they're, right, I mean, right, so let's say that the video was slightly more clear and we could see that there were two muzzle flashes and then there were five casings. That would be some evidence that those casings did not come from the appellant.
That would be a little bit of a harder case, I think. Yes, perhaps. But that's not the evidence. That I count four with possible one more recoil at the end. They are fast. Those cases.
I mean, I've watched the video too. I guess that's my question is, if you're saying that the strongest evidence is the muzzle flashes plus the casings, and we're supposed to do the math between watching the video with the muzzle flashes and the number of casings, I think that that is somewhat challenging given the quality of the video.
The circumstances that are proved are the multiple muzzle flashes and the multiple casings. Those support the jury's verdict, and I would ask this court to defer to that. There is not a, otherwise stated, it's not a reasonable conclusion that this was a BB gun based on that evidence. And not just that evidence in isolation, but what happens before and what happens after. The totality of the circumstances does support the conclusion that it was a firearm. And if there are no further questions, I would ask that this court affirm the jury's verdict, and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marker. Mr. Scanlon, you'll have the last word, sir.
I do think that we have to be careful about whether we're talking about conclusions or we're talking about inferences that lead to conclusions.
Can you tell me how old your client is?
Or
is that not in the record?
I don't believe it's in the certainly not in the trial record. It
Thank
would
you.
Be in the PSI or I'm going to say he might have been less younger, around 20.
Thank you.
When this happened, I'm not sure. There is a difference between conclusions and conclusions that rest on inferences. Conclusions based on direct evidence review, is it reasonable that they reach that conclusion? Very easy. If the conclusion that this was a firearm necessarily rested on them drawing inferences from the evidence, inferences from what the video shows, inferences from the location of the casings, there is no direct evidence of a casing flying from his gun to landing in the boulevard. The muzzle flashes, weirdly, don't even show up on the stills. So there are inferences that have to be drawn about how many times he shot, about whether those casings are from his gun. And so that's why those basic facts about there's something coming out of his gun when he shoots, there are casings found here, you still have to use an inference to get to the conclusion that it was a firearm, and that's why I say it's reasonable to decide to conclude either way. As far as his conduct with the gun that he had, he absolutely used his gun so as to deter a gunfight. He did not even pull the gun out as he's approaching going north, and they started retreating. It's working. It's doing, he's like this. They don't even see what he has, but they assume he has a gun, and so they start going the other way. And even then, he gets shot at and still comes and still is ducking between. He doesn't fire until he's fired at. And after the first guy fires, he completely runs. You watch the video, he is gone. He's not up behind, hiding behind other cars. He is gone. The other guy is still hiding between the cars up the street, and he's the one shooting back. And that is when, okay, I'm going to fire this thing and see if I can make him go away. After that, he didn't do anything further with the gun. He went up and hid behind the front SUV, and then from there, the guy's still up there and still shooting, or maybe he doesn't. Maybe he thinks the guy has left because he comes out in the open and starts running away. And that's when he gets shot in the back. I mean, so he's using whatever his gun is, he's using it as a deterrent, which is exactly how you would use something that's not a firearm. The exhibits that respondent cited certainly show where the casings are. I think it's most helpful to watch the video of when they recover them, because you see the officers sort of pacing off the area and you get a clear view of where they are in relation to the pickup, to the tree, to the, and so, and that's exhibit 81, starting roughly at 13:40, 14 and running for about a minute. You see them collect all five of those casings there. Yeah, and so I don't know, unless you have any further questions.
I don't think we do. Thank you very much,
right.
Mr. Scanlon.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Mr. Marker, the matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.
Please rise.